you know how there's that saying, there's a fine line between stupid and clever? I don't know if it's a saying. I just know it's a line from Spinal Tap that I think is really funny. Welcome back to Justice and Drew, along with Sam here on Twin Cities News Talk. I've got a new one. Apparently, there's a thin line between tinfoil hat and credible.
Okay.
I was online looking at, I was perusing the hashtag release the memo, and looking at some commentary from individuals who are, you know, like writers at Vanity Fair that are also political contributors to, you know, major news networks, and just some of the ridiculousness using things like, oh, they're just puppets of Putin, and I mean, going off the it's one thing to talk Russia collusion. That's fine. If that's your bag, I'm cool with that. But to go this route and to go this ridiculous route of, you know, using things like a puppet of Putin and and how they like it's almost Maxine Waters territory. And
it's just, you cross the line over into Maxine Waters' world.
It's weird.
Which is the worst Disneyland attraction.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, yeah.
It's a bizarre world after all.
Representative Nick Zerwas.
Oh, the silky, sultry, smooth sounds of Nick Zerwas.
We don't.
Please sing some more.
No, I don't.
So we don't have a memo yet, right? Has not out yet. We're just waiting. They're gonna. It's good. 9:05 is when they're gonna release that memo. Where are you at? Where are you at on the memo?
You know,
if you're on a scale of one being bad to nothing burger,
well, I think it's hard to predict. But I think the idea that they doth protest too much seems to be ringing a little true.
Yeah,
in the last few days, if this was completely Republican hackery, made up by Chairman Nunes, then I think they say 90% of that stuff we can prove is false, and you're going to look like an idiot.
Right.
But this just seems odd to me.
It would make sense to me if they didn't think it would ever see the light of day. And maybe that's part of what happened with this memo. Maybe there was a time when it was still being questioned. I know we know the House Intelligence Committee voted to release it, but then there was this talk swirling around whether or not it was going to be too dangerous to be released.
Well, it wasn't that long ago. Was it last week when you guys had Sheriff Clark on? And Sheriff Clark's opinion was the government will likely never release this memo.
Right. Right.
So I think you're 100% right, John, in that it was easy for the Democrats to just kind of go nutty when they thought this thing would never be released. And now that the wheels started coming in motion that it was going to be released, then it's just panic city.
Head started to spin.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll find out today. I mean, and you hit on it, and we can move over to other things, but I think you hit on it. If this is a nothing burger, right, and we know that there are those on the there are Democrats that have seen it. If it is, I'm with you. Then there's no reason to protest it. Let it come out and let Nunes and everybody else look in the GOP look like a bunch of like they set a fire ablaze that didn't, you know, for no reason.
Right.
Well, I would compare it to, I forget, our news cycles are all mashing together, but several days back, the big story was the secret society.
Right.
Within the FBI.
Within the FBI. And the context of that came out, and basically the Republicans that tried to push that secret society narrative were just kind of laughed aside.
Yeah.
And said, okay, good call. And once you see that it was one line in a joke text message that you got all this hype over a throwaway line in a text message. Either that's going to happen with this memo, or what I'm tending to believe is there's so much there.
Yeah.
That it's going to be quite groundbreaking.
You know, and hat tip to Senator Ron Johnson with that whole situation, because he was the one that he came out with a lot of concern over that that secret society, and then when it got downplayed in terms of putting some context on it, I was impressed with how he handled it. He owned it.
That's what I was told. I went with what I was told.
Yeah,
and what I was told ended up being being a little less provocative than it originally sounded.
And we can hang on, Drew. We can hang on to this particular article. I know you grabbed it this morning from Reason, but. And we can kind of, I'm thinking maybe we wait to see if the memo comes out because it'll be a little bit more relevant later on this morning. But there's a great piece in Reason today talking about how Donald Jr.'s Trump Tower meeting was not a crime and neither was lying about it. Right. Special Counsel Robert Mueller is investigating the president's role in writing a butt-covering statement that was misleading but not illegal. The idea here is that it looks bad on Trump Jr. and it could potentially look bad on President Trump to have lied to the media about what the nature of that meeting was, but that was lying to the media. That's not a crime.
Right.
It's a really interesting take. Right.
To lie to the media.
It looks bad.
Yeah, politicians do it all the time.
Yeah.
Like every day.
Yeah.
Like, well, constantly.
Like right now.
And then the media passes on those lies. Even when they know they're lies, they'll pass them on as if they're true.
Yeah. So again, we can hang on to that and when and if the memo gets released before the end of the show and talk a little further about it. Hey, I do have we have the clip, Drew, of Justin Timberlake. So did you see this yesterday, Nick Zerwas?
JT?
Yeah. So he did a 20-minute. He did Justin Timberlake, right, performing at the Super Bowl. He did a 20-minute press conference in front of the media, and he was asked a very.
Yeah. Well, originally he was doing a press conference that wasn't in front of the media, and then he was like, "This is a waste of time."
Yeah. Yeah. This seems bizarre.
Nobody's here,
right?
And he was asked if he wanted to see his son go out there and run some routes, and this was his response.
So you would support if he wanted to run some routes and get in the NFL?
He will never play football.
Okay.
No. I mean, it's kind of like that thing where my main objective is that he become a great person. If he wants to get into the arts or sports, then yeah, I mean, I would fully support that.
That's not what you just said.
I think, I can hopefully offer him some advice on what to do and what not to do. And
which is football.
Right now we're working on our manners. That's like, that's a big deal in our house right now. It's like one thing at a time.
Now again, look, I mean, it doesn't really matter too much what Justin Timberlake wants and doesn't want to do with his son, but it is a little bit funny that the guy who's performing at the Super Bowl, when asked about having his son run some routes, says he's never going to let him play football.
Yeah, doing a press conference to promote the championship game of the NFL, the National Football League, is asked that question and his immediate response is, "My son will never play football." And then immediately realized, oh, that was a dumb thing. I better start walking that back.
Arts and sports and
stuff, you know,
manners and words, alphabet soup. Want to get
I'm sure
stage.
Roger Goodell was not pleased about that response. Brian Miller,
hello. I wonder what the last Justin Timberlake
round table.
Wonder what the last Timberlake if he hosts the Adult Video Network Awards.
So how would you feel if your son just did a career? You know, yeah.
You want to see him out there running some routes?
No, we're teaching him abstinence. Well, it's funny too because there's an article I don't have it in front of me. I saw it earlier this morning, but there was an article about with the NFL season ending. What does the NFL do looking towards next season? You know, with just so much negativity on it, and then you've also got the potential of the XFL now. So it's just in light of all that to have the halftime performer go make a comment like that.
Why doesn't he just say yeah? Yeah, he's probably going to be a quarterback. Right. No one's going to remember. No one's going to care. The kid's not going to be a quarterback. He's Justin Timberlake's kid. He's going to chill. Right. You know, like, just say yes.
All right, let's go here. Out of the Associated Press, and several outlets picked up on this. Top advisor says former Governor Tim Pawlenty has scheduled a meeting with his inner circle as he nears a decision on whether to run for Minnesota governor. Apparently, the AP needs to contact Drew because Drew made the announcement earlier this morning that he is running.
He's running. I've announced. I'm announcing on Pawlenty's behalf. He has not consulted with me. He has not asked me to do this, but I'm just going to go ahead and do it.
So true. You're going to love this. Pawlenty's, look at the AP story. Pawlenty's possible entry has been a source of speculation for months, as he would likely be the immediate favorite among Republicans if he gets in. He was ruled out running for former Senator Al Franken last month. Still can't let.
They're still calling it former Senator Al Franken.
Still can't let Al Franken go.
That actually holds that seat right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should just start calling Tina Smith former Senator Al Franken. Hi, former Senator Al Franken. Wait, no, my name's Tina. No.
That's a real, you know, I'm writing that.
We don't want to change all the letterhead and the door signs. Never, we just add a former to the front of everything with a piece of scotch tape.
You know what? I could see a scenario in which he goes to court to try to get that on the ballot.
You're going to vote
for former Senator Al Franken or Karen Housley.
It's going to be on the signs. I'm writing it down. Never calling her Tina Smith again.
Join the rest of the media because they refuse to refer to that as Tina Smith's seat. It's always former Senator Al Franken's seat, which I kind of think is insulting to Tina Smith.
Yeah. Do people constantly refer to, hey, former President John F. Kennedy? No, I'm Lyndon Baines Johnson.
Is Mark Dayton holding the former former Governor Tim Pawlenty's seat?
Everybody's really just former President George Washington.
That's true.
It's for a
That's
long true. Time now.
Fair.
Brian McClung, a former top aide, longtime advisor to Pawlenty, confirmed it is an indication of his active consideration of a bid. McClung said Pawlenty will be talking with Minnesotans over the coming weeks to assess support and gather advice. And so let's go around the room. And Representative Nick Zerwa, I'll start with you. What do you... Last week there was some indication of this. So.
This is the least surprising, shocking news we've had in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think...
The rumors have been out there for a while.
Well, and former Governor Pawlenty has been doing for months now the talk circuit going around the state, speaking at different chambers of commerce and Kiwanis clubs and Rotary clubs and other areas and really large presentations. I know several months back we saw a big indication, as was reported by NPR and others, that he was likely looking at getting back into politics as he was letting his mullet grow out.
Mm-hmm.
So
he said he was retired from politics.
Currently.
That was back in, October or November?
While he was setting up political talks all across the state.
Right, yeah.
It was in that moment.
And I know there was a lot of recruitment efforts going on when it became clear that Al Franken was going to resign and that there was going to be a special election this year. Yep. A lot of people wanted Pawlenty to run for that seat. He apparently was not interested.
Yep.
And from what I've heard, has been telling people that he wants to be governor again.
Yep.
Why? And, I mean, you can speculate. We'll play the speculation game. But Tim Pawlenty, two terms, right?
Yep.
Stepped away, tried to ascend to higher offices and things like that. In your opinion, Nick Zerwa, start with you. Why do you think he wants to be governor again? Is there unfinished business?
I think it's a great gig. I think it's a great job. It's close to home. Right now he lives part-time between Minnesota and out east between New York and D.C. And I think it's a great, great job. And to have that job is probably one of the best jobs in the entire country that you can have.
It's just the nature of it being kind of a cushy...
Well, I don't think cushy. I just think it's a great role. It's a great job. And I think there are benefits that go along with it. There's a lot of pomp and circumstance. I think there's the ability to get things done that go along with that. It brings him back to his family. He does not have to worry about taking a job for money. So I think it's a great role. I think I am surprised that it took this long for it to be this far and out. For months and months, all major money people within the GOP, as they didn't donate to other gubernatorial candidates, were talking about we're holding out donating until former Governor Pawlenty announces that he's running for governor, and then we will likely be supporting him. And so the challenge has been, when you look at what the major candidates have been able to raise versus what the DFL candidates have been able to raise, you have this huge gap. And there's a reason for that. All the money people are waiting to see what Pawlenty does.
Yeah, then you just answered my follow-up question, because a lot of reports came out yesterday showing the fundraising. And I'm pulling this off the top of my head. I don't have it in front of me, but it was something like along the lines of combined, all the GOP candidates had raised somewhere around $500,000.
$464,000. Okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah, yeah, yeah
close
yeah.
to $500,000,
yeah.
which would put them third in DFL. So they put them behind Walls, put them behind Coleman on the DFL side collectively.
Yep.
Which is pretty embarrassing.
Yep.
We're gonna get more into that. We do have the story here from the Star Tribune about the DFL far outpacing GOP and Minnesota governor money race. Also, I think we're missing another reason why, and we'll talk about it next. Why he's running? Why Pawlenty may be running? 651-989-5855. Got the round table in the studio. We'll get to your phone calls as well here on Twin Cities News Talk. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM. Justice Andrew. Sam is screening your phone call. 651-989-5855. And we have the Friday Roundtable in studio. Comedian Brian Miller, Representative Nick Zerwas. We were talking about how this particular story here out of NPR and Associated Press picked it up. Pawlenty signaling interest in governor's race, calls for a donor meeting, and we were kind of going around the room and asking the roundtable why you think he is. Brian Miller, what are your thoughts? Why do you think Pawlenty would go at this again?
Well, who really better to be former Governor Tim Pawlenty than Tim Pawlenty? I mean, he's really fits the shoe. In that context, it seems to me a nice. I think governor sounds like a nice level, you know, where it's like, hey, you're important. You do actual right. stuff that has an impact, but you get to stay in your home state. You got to look, you know. It seems like a nice combination, like Sarah was saying, of pomp and circumstance and actual effect.
I'm gonna go out on a limb on this one, and he ran unsuccessfully for the presidency.
Correct.
And given the current political climate and the way things are right now, you know, maybe if you're Pawlenty, you see another opportunity and you see your best pathway back to running again would be get back to being governor. He's only 58. Okay. Hold the seat for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, look, you know, maybe not, you know, for the next election, but the one after, and then
He's got his eyes.
Maybe it's like
the governorship.
We have the public has such a short term memory. Nobody, I mean, we here may be thinking, oh, he's already been in this seat before. He's been down this road. He does have a name on the national stage. He is somewhat taken seriously in that regard. He is well known. Mm-hmm. So it could
he's
just
considered.
He could just be posturing to put himself back in a position where he can run for the presidency again.
On the national level, he's considered one of the more moderate Republicans,
yeah.
especially now.
Yeah.
You know, especially in the Trump era.
He's certainly not a Trump Republican.
No. Not even remotely.
Yeah, I have a hard time thinking I just want to go back and do that job again. Well, you know, that's
so and I get that. And I tell you, I was leaning that direction until he slammed the door on the United States Senate.
I know. I had the same thought while John was saying that.
Because in my mind, if you want to run for the president of the United States, being a senator gets you that federal level experience, federal issues. It gets you on the national
stage. Gets you on the Meet the Press on Sunday morning.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
you're in Washington Post, not Min Post.
Right. Yes, yeah. exactly.
Yeah.
But is that not seen as a? I agree with you, but is that not? Could you make an argument that that would be portrayed as a step down?
What do you mean?
If you
the Senate?
Yeah. In the eyes of the casual public,
not from where Pawlenty was.
Okay. No.
There's always that argument of like executive experience. You know, that's always the argument for, like, you know, the Clinton was, well, hey, they've got executive experience over these senators, so who are,
and traditionally, governors do do better in those types in presidential races mm-hmm. than senators have.
Yeah, and you know, most people who run for president seem to do it at least more once before they do it. You know, it's more rare to get it on the first try than it is
right.
the other way around. So.
Absolutely, and I think it's pretty common actually for former governors to transition into a Senate seat or Senate. Run, then you would think it's still a pretty exclusive club in the United States Senate. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good gig.
It's a great gig.
It is a far cry from serving in the United States House of Representatives, which is kind of the kettle call of federal service.
Well, you're constantly running for re-election.
You're constantly
with
running
a,
for
with
re-election.
With a two-year election cycle.
You're on kind of a shoestring budget with a shoestring staff. Senate, you have multiple district offices, you're staffing up across the state.
You only have to run every 6 years.
You only run every 6 years. So it's really interesting. I was right with John in the idea that Plenty was getting ready to run again for president and wanted to run from the perch of office. With him kind of taking a pass at this Senate race, I just don't think that fits the narrative anymore.
And just real quick, one, and not to, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but there's another facet to this that I think needs to be mentioned, and it's one that's not talked about a lot. There's oftentimes, and this is an obvious statement, but there's oftentimes a lot of outside pressure for people to go and run. I mean, there could be a whole slate of other reasons that have way less to do with his desire and more a bunch of people who want to see him run for a myriad of different reasons. And he obviously has a level of confidence if he's going to do it again, right?
But that is the opposite of what we're hearing. What we're hearing is that Mitch McConnell and DC Republicans were hounding him to run for this United States Senate position. And he took a pass on all of that. I truly believe that he is likely going to run for governor, and he's likely going to run for governor because he feels compelled and called to serve as the governor of the state of Minnesota again. I just don't think it's politically motivated for an aspiration of higher office, or that he's being asked to do it because of some political party need. Because if he was trying to fill the need, he would heed the call.
There are other needs.
Well, he would heed the call and run for the spot in D.C. Yeah.
Hey, Sam, can you do us a favor? Can you get Tim on the phone? We can just ask him.
Hey, Tim.
You need to reach out, just get him on.
651-99.
It's him. Call him.
I'm just saying.
In regards to him opting away from the Senate race and opting and leaning in, at this point, leaning towards the governor's race, do you think it was maybe just a factor of a calculation of the path of least resistance? Like he could have just factored that running against the senator formerly known as Al Franken would be a more difficult path than running against whoever ends up the DFL nominee for governor.
Well, I think you're running into a really tough political climate in a statewide election either way in Minnesota, which for Republicans is a real challenge. That being said, the last Republican to win a statewide election in Minnesota was Tim Pawlenty.
Yeah, exactly. 651-995-8555, Rachel in Minneapolis. Good morning, Rachel.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Fantastic.
Good. I listen to you guys every morning at work. So.
Well, you know what? I would listen to you every morning at work if I had that option.
It's a little creepy.
Kind of a Chuck Berry thing.
About Tim Pawlenty running again. I mean, have we just become so complacent and lazy as a society? We have three families we can vote from, the Clintons, the Bushes, and the Kennedys. And now, instead of even voting from the Pawlenty family, we're just voting for the same guy because we don't really care to find somebody new.
Well, I don't know if I would put this on the electorate at this point. We'll see how he
does. Yeah.
You know, we'll see how he does. We'll see if he wins. I don't know if at this point I would put that on the electorate. It's not like there's a bunch of rank and file Republicans out there pining for the days of T-Paw. That's I've got no sense of that. I have not seen that. You know, and we've got our finger on the pulse on a lot of these things, and that's just not out there. Republicans want somebody who can win statewide.
Right, right.
Yes, yes.
But I don't see them out there going, gosh, man, if only T-Paw would run again, that'd be great.
I will add this, and it really is next to nothing, but it's just an amusing anecdote, in my opinion. But the last time I went on, one of the times I went on SC Cup's show, it was talking about the Al Franken resigning in that seat. And this was when Pawlenty was still being talked about. When I mentioned his name, now I wasn't in the room. I did a remote hit, so I couldn't see anybody. When I mentioned his name, and it was a slate of Democrats because I was the only Republican, it was an outburst of laughter from everybody in the room. when I brought his name up to run. And again, just anecdotal, but I thought that was really, really interesting that when I made mention to a national slate of panelists who were Democrats that Pawlenty was, you know, talked about running, and it was audible that they all thought that was amusing. So I thought that was really interesting.
Dave, well, Santiago, go ahead.
Got a few things for you. Remember when Sean Hannity was in Minnesota during the elections, and they're talking about Sarah Palin and Bachman and all those people running, and then he goes, hey, how about Governor Tim Pawlenty? It was one person clapping in the background. It was embarrassing. It was crickets out there. Nobody wanted him to run for president. A lot of people who do remember him in the governor's race and running as a governor remember, he was referred to as Governor Green Jeans for all his, all corn ethanol, corn subsidies, and all these other things to try to, be a more moderate and, cater to the left. But one other question, since you guys also do a podcast on animals you don't know anything about, can you try a Mythbusters thing? I heard something about if you put a stun gun on a light pole, it will remove eagles.
That's not very American. Yeah. Why would you want to remove eagles?
We'll conduct that experiment late Sunday night.
I don't know, man. I love freedom. I love money, and I love eagles.
Yeah, just ask Doug.
I love America.
651-989-585. More coming up right after this. Justice. Looking at Pete Hegseth at a diner in Stillwater up on the TV, Fox and Friends. You can hear Pete on the show every Tuesday.
He couldn't come by.
Well, he's in Stillwater.
To Justice and Drew today, huh?
He's doing his diner thing.
Couldn't have invited us to Stillwater to do the show now.
Yeah, I like diners.
It does not.
Yeah. Yeah, I like going places.
Yeah.
I had an awkward celebrity moment in the lobby. I'm fairly certain I saw Matt Money Smith, who I know is on iHeart Station in California. He's the voice of the Chargers.
Yeah.
And I really like him. And I wanted to know if it was Matt Money Smith. So I was like, sup. But then his sup wasn't enough for me to gauge if that was him. And I kept trying to kind of get more out of him while I waited for the elevator.
Did you keep saying sup?
I could have just said, hey, are you Matt Money Smith? But for some reason, I didn't go with that. I went with the espionage kind of thing. Yeah, sup again. And he just didn't say enough for me to gauge if that was the voice. So
you wanted him to know that you recognized him for who he is without having to ask.
Without having to be a goofball. Hey, are you Matt Money Smith?
Yeah. But you know that I know that you know that I know.
Yeah. I think that, recognizing a radio guy, that feels like bonus points,
It happens because on a much, much obviously smaller scale, but it'll happen to us, people recognize us by our voice or whatever. And
sure.
That's always a little unusual.
Yeah. The guy that I rode the elevator up with this morning was like shaking. I don't know why. It was very weird. I just felt the need to bring it up.
I actually had a...
He waited to hold the door for him. He got in, and he was going on a different floor, and he seemed like he was really nervous.
So John got to meet Michael J. Fox.
Oh, jeez.
Wow.
I'm a big fan. I love
you.
Usually that's my department, is to freak everybody out.
Flag on the field.
I like the guy. Talented Canadian.
I had the crippled person, strange.
I have to say, that was uncalled for.
I had a strange moment of recognition. I was at the barber shop the other day. I was at a Great Clips because that's the kind of money I'm pulling down. And I was sitting at a Great Clips, and somebody didn't expect to see someone of my stature at a Great Clips. But I had just been sitting there, like kind of sullenly reading a book for like 20 minutes, waiting for my haircut. And this guy just walked up to me in a really crowded lab and goes, "Hey, man, you're really funny." And everybody around just looked at me like, "What the hell just happened?" I hadn't said anything for 20 minutes, and he left, and I just let it hang there.
I want you all to know.
Yeah,
I'm really.
Yeah,
funny.
Just in case anyone was wondering.
Well, I'll tell you what, to put a bow on this conversation. If you
family ties, as it were.
When you well, the guy in the elevator, by the way, he did have a briefcase and was wearing a vest, so I don't know.
If you see something, say something.
No, but when you get a chance, there's signs up in the different production studios, and they're reserved. for that reason.
Oh.
So you're Matt Money Smith. If you just start poking in windows, you might be able to get confirmation.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. I thought maybe he was coming in to shoot Petros and Money, or you know, take that from.
Yeah. But I mean, there's people using all the studios and stuff, so that might. So he might actually be. You know, you should burst in while he's live.
Yeah.
It is you.
Ooh, I'm going to Travis Bickle this whole day. I'm just going to wander around creepily and stare at people.
Getting back to the conversation we were having about Pawlenty, and we can get into the next story out of the Star Tribune about the DFL outpacing Minnesota in the governor money race. And again, to sort of wrap that up, that caller was talking about how there wasn't a lot of enthusiasm when he saw Pawlenty. Maybe it comes down to kind of circling back to what you said, Nick, and it's a matter of maybe on the national level he ran for the presidency, he failed, he wants to go, he does want to serve in office and figures that this is the best way to get back into that position because he doesn't have as big of a profile as he thought on the national stage. So that could be it, too.
Yeah, I just think, you know, to go through that and commit to running at that level and for that office, it's gotta be in your gut and you just gotta want it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it can be a calculation. I don't think it can be, I'm doing this for that. It is so constant. It's so much work. It takes so much out of you and your family.
For political observers, it's very easy to overanalyze these decisions and assume that there's a lot more calculations being put into play than there actually are, when it could be just a matter of, you know, I miss being in the public office, I miss being in the public eye, and I'm going to look for what I feel like is the best opportunity to go out there and do what I feel like I do best, which is serve.
Yeah, and I think he's in a position where he can do that. He can come back to Minnesota, not kind of live between Minnesota, New York, and D.C., and it's best for his family, and I think moving forward, I think he has a fantastic shot of winning.
Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. I would agree. My question will be going forward, because I think if he does run, and my assumption is that he'll make a token effort at the endorsement, but it won't matter whether he gets it or not. He's going to run up in a primary, and he will probably win the primary. That's my assumption at this point. My question going forward will be the political landscape is very different than when Tim Pawlenty left office, and that type of Republican, you know, may not do as well in the past as they've typically done. Is there, and we don't know the answer to this, but is there in this upcoming election cycle, is there going to be a greater hunger for more of a Trump-style Republican? And I don't necessarily mean brash and crass. I just mean sort of authentic outsider, you know, not your typical politician. You look at Tim Pawlenty and you're like, that dude's a politician. He's like, he is the embodiment. He's the Wikipedia entry for politician. And is that going to do as well as it has in election cycles past coming up? We don't know the answer to that. That will remain to be seen.
Or was his sort of genteelness to be kind of take advantage of what a potential backlash against a Trump-style Republican, right?
That would be the other route, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, hard to say.
Yeah, and there's no way to know until it happens because, I mean, there are things, like today, there are things happening on the national stage that could have an impact on races like that, but you don't know until you get to that moment in time.
Wait, real quick, what about one thing, if you're a senator, you're beholden to a whole different set of people, probably much larger set of people. I mean, any politician to some degree is beholden to donors and stuff. He at least he knows who he's beholden to in Minnesota.
He's got the relationships already.
And like I said, I mean that for every politician on either side of the aisle. Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. I can see him going like, oh man, do I really want to line up for all this whole new litany of people I've got to?
Yeah, you're being lobbied by you know, a much deeper pool of lobbyists that have a lot more influence. Whereas when in Minnesota, he's presumably already got all those relationships locked down.
Yeah.
We referenced this a little earlier from the Star Tribune. The DFL is just blowing away the GOP when it comes to money in the governor's race. The three major Republican candidates for governor, raised a combined $464,000 last year. That's according to campaign finance reports released yesterday. Jeff Johnson led the way with $260,000. But Representative Tim Walz, the DFLer from Southern Minnesota's 1st Congressional District, all the Republicans combined $464,000. Tim Walz raised $1.1 million.
Ooh.
Former St. Paul Mayor Chris Coleman and Aaron Murphy together raised $937,000. And if you break those up apart, the combined GOP field would come in third in the overall fundraising of, amongst individual Democrats.
Well, I guess the first question I have is, and Representative Nick Zerwas, we'll throw it to you. What about that is significant? How that big of a difference, knowing the political makeup and the demographics of the state? What's the bigger takeaway, that the DFL brought in that much money, or that the GOP hasn't brought in nearly as much?
Well, I think it's twofold. One, the idea that the Republican Party is the party of big business and big money.
It's never been the case in Minnesota.
It's never been the case in Minnesota. And this continues to prove that it's not the case. And when you go through and look at the amount of union dollars that have gone to prop up these campaigns early on the DFL side, it's staggering. It's staggering. So I think that's one takeaway from this. The other thing is, if you look historically back, the off-year election fundraising cycle generally has favored Democrats historically, and then is usually evened out in the election year between the two campaigns. But where we got hurt so badly over the last two election cycles is that third-party or outside money has been 3-1 or 4-1 against Republicans, with the independent expenditures heavily favoring Democrats within the state. So that's a big challenge. So I don't care if your candidate is Jeff Johnson. I don't care if you're waiting for Tim Pawlenty to get in the race. But if you are a money person in the Republican Party and you want a Republican governor, it's time you clear up your crocodile arms and get off your wallet and start helping out, or we are setting ourselves up for another 8 years of DFL executive control, and we're doing it without even making them work for it. And that's a problem.
Yeah.
Well, and I would be curious. Well, I guess one, you kind of answered the question, but one, I'd like to know how that money is being spent. I would love to see the numbers from previous years where there was a big differential between the parties in terms of money brought in. And then once the campaigns were over, I'd like to see, say, if the DFL's got exponentially more money, I'd like to see how they ended up spending that, how they spent that money, and how much money they had left over. Like, how big? I mean, you're obviously alluding to the fact that having an influx of donation money is really, really important. But again, I'd like to see how that money is spent in an actual campaign to find out how important that is.
So to give you a little bit of insight, in the press release from the Tim Walz campaign, they talked about having a dozen staff members and staff members present in all 8 congressional districts.
Okay.
My gut is, in the Republican candidates that are still in the race, there might be one paid staff person per campaign, and a handful of really committed volunteers.
Pat Garofalo on Twitter.
Yeah.
And nothing ever good comes after that phrase.
Oh, be nice to Pat. He's had a few fat thumb moments. Come on.
Representative Pat Garofalo tweeted, fundraising for the GOP governor looks horrible. And he went on to, but he noted that you've got the Woodbury mayor, right? Mary Giuliani. Stephen, it's just really hard not to say Mayor Giuliani. Mayor Mary Giuliani Stevens. She got into the race very late last year. She hasn't been in the race very long. And she quickly raised $70,000. So he noted that if she's able to continue at that pace, then she will have a chance to be competitive. Now that's a long shot, obviously, but basically he says unless a new candidate enters the race, he's quoted here saying, we lose. It's that simple. Is it that simple?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's that simple at all. I think it's one of two things needs to happen. And they both have the same common denominator. Donors have to start donating. And there's 100 or 200 Republicans that can decide, yep, this seat is worth fighting for and open up their checkbooks and try to get the war chest needed to run a campaign or not. And they look at Jeff
Ultimately,
Johnson.
Ultimately, how much do you think is going to need to be spent?
By the campaigns themselves?
Yeah.
$2.5 million.
Okay. And then outside money?
$3 million.
Okay. That's they've got a long way to go.
Cha-ching.
Now,
you alluded to it earlier, but I mean, I'm sitting here and I have to. I'm having a difficult time not ending up at the conclusion that the donors are waiting for Pawlenty to either blank or get off the pot.
Yeah. That begins to make a lot more sense, but that goes right back around to the other caller about what is it and who is it the voters want.
Yeah.
So I mean, I guess the question that pops up in my mind is: are they waiting until the field is completely set? Right. Mm. So if Pawlenty's out in the wings and there's a bunch of donors going, well, if he's going to run, I'm going to wait. Not necessarily wait to throw my money at him, but I'm just going to wait to see what the landscape looks like once that happens.
The challenge is, if you look at the DFL campaign finance reports, what you'll see is the top 20 or so money people within the DFL caucus gave to everybody.
Hmm, okay.
They took the top 3 or 4 DFL candidates and maxed out to them all.
Hmm. Man, they've got so much money.
It's so much.
not me. I'm taking donations. I'm not running for anything, but I am taking donations.
The stand-up comedian lobby has not chosen its preferred candidate
There's not a lot of money in that lobby, let me tell you. That's a hard group of people to get together.
They're all standing around selling T-shirts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, T-shirts. They sell T-shirts to make money.
Have we ever had... I'm trying, and I could be like missing something really, really big here, so if I am, then... Absolutely correct me, but have we ever had like a really widely popular comedian run for office?
Al Franken.
Okay. And look how that turned out.
Yeah.
Well, it turned out.
But he wasn't funny, though, but I hear what you're saying. Yeah, you're right.
But that's the one, I really think.
Did he do stand-up? Did he do?
He never did stand-up. I mean, he did sketch and stuff.
I guess I was leaning more towards that.
Drew Hastings, a very nutty, very funny guy, is the mayor of a decent-sized town in Ohio, I believe. But I mean, he'd been a comedian for 25 years. He's a big Bob and Tom guy.
I just think it'd be great to have like a Seinfeld who was sitting as a senator.
What's the deal with parliamentary procedure?
Yeah,
who's Kevin Robert? Hart? Why is he setting all the rules?
Oh, Kevin Hart would be great. Yeah.
White could probably win in Alabama.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Kevin Hart's going to be in. He's in everything eventually anyway.
He'll be in the Senate.
Yeah.
Now starring in the Senate.
He'd be like, he doesn't really have any policies, but he really sells the hell out of us.
Sorry. I didn't mean to deviate off that.
He makes Nick Zerwas look tall.
Oh, that's true. I like to think of you as the white Kevin Hart.
What in the hell?
Took till 7:51. Made it till 7:51.
You're Kevin Hart problems.
Just minding my own business.
Half a Kevin Hart.
Okay, that's not accurate.
651-989-5855 is the phone number. All right, coming up, we've got the World Famous Parody Song Contest. Looking forward to that. I haven't heard it yet this week, so I'm very excited.
We got a really good prize this week too. There's a big Super Bowl event happening tonight. It's called Leather and Laces. It's a star-studded celebrity event hosted by Jenny McCarthy and Donnie Wahlberg. You got a Wahlberg in the house. Flo Rida will be performing.
Oh, wow, really?
I know. Guest DJ Brandi Cyrus.
Can we get tickets in the house?
Is that related to a Miley Cyrus?
Sister of Miley, yeah.
I want to go see Flo Rida.
Music artist Juliana Hale performing live. So, this is a big event, and these are big money tickets. So we've got a pair of tickets to this Leather and Laces event happening tonight for the winner of the Parody Song Contest.
We'll also be talking
to hang with Donnie Wahlberg.
We'll also be talking with Representative Tom Emmer. Coming up, we'll get to your phone calls. And out of the Star Tribune, for Minneapolis, brand new mayor, a blitz to game day. That's right. Jacob Fry, man of the children.